final case for argument is 2012-1693, Janssen Pharmaceutical versus Watson Lab. Now to the most patient group of all, have to sit here for the entire proceeding this morning. Whenever you're ready, Mr. Green.
Thank you, Your Honors, and good morning. This will change the topic somewhat. We're dealing with a combination of oral contraceptives. By way of background, and I know the Court is quite familiar with the background based on the extensive briefings, but this, to put the argument into perspective, there's a product called Ortho-Tri-Cycline. That product was covered by a series of patents issued to Ortho, going back to application file in 1983. The patent in suit, the 815 patent, is a patent which was issued to cover the follow-along product, Ortho-Tri-Cycline Low. The only difference between Ortho-Tri-Cycline and Ortho-Tri-Cycline Low is the amount of estrogen used. In Ortho-Tri-Cycline, you have 35 micrograms of estrogen. In Ortho-Tri-Cycline Low,
can I start off on the anticipation argument?
Absolutely.
Because I understand, you know, we have some cases at clear value and others that suggest that a range is sufficient for anticipation. But I'm having a little problem here. We've got other cases like Adafino that seem to suggest otherwise. And in this case, if we were just talking about one range, this one range, and that was it, then I think I might agree that there are a finite number of ways you can go within that range. But it seems to me the patent's disclosure has numerous ranges. It has numerous variables. So we are talking into the thousands or millions of potential variations. So it seems to me not to be a good fit for the cases that have been willing to accommodate that. So I'd like to hear your response.
And that's a very good question, Your Honor. It goes right to the heart where the error occurred at the district court level. And that is the view of that particular range. The case law from this court is absolutely clear. You go back to the In Re Graves case, which cites the Greece. And that case law says you don't stand back and look at it a prior art disclosure, and they're asking the question of anticipation from the standpoint of an individual walking down the sidewalk. It's supposed to be viewed from the position of a person of ordinary skill in the art. And that, in fact, was done in this case, and that view was expressed by Dr. Barnhart and not refuted by others, that the range in this case is a 20 to 50 microgram range of EE. And the district court went astray in its finding of no anticipation because it simply ignored the testimony of not only Dr. Barnhart, but the testimony of Ortho's own experts that said that range is a finite range. So you don't view that.
There are numerous other variables within the claims, right?
There are numerous variables within the claim which also need to be viewed from the standpoint of a person of ordinary skill in the art. And again, it's a combination error here. The first question is, what does that range mean? And the range of 20 to 50, clearly, and with unrebutted testimony, means 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50. Dr. Barnhart testified that range meant that. There is nothing in the record that contradicts that. Now the question is, and I'd say we've got a lot of cases that are thrown around here, but I would also direct the court back to the In Re Graves case and its citation to In Re Graves, the Greece, because what does that case say? This is a CCPA case, as far as I know. It's not been overturned by this court. And it says, a reference anticipates a claim if it discloses the claimed invention, quote, such that a skilled artisan could take its teaching in combination with his own knowledge of the particular art and be in possession of the invention. That's a clear instruction to look at the entire reference that's being viewed from the standpoint of a person of ordinary skill in the art. And what do we have here? We have example 4. Example 4...
This is like in the 554 patent.
Or 006 patent, right. The same examples. We have example 4, and again, not rebutted. Example 4 specifically covers ortho-tricycline. Claim 9 in the 006 patent specifically covers ortho-tricycline. Ortho-tricycline was, at the time, one of, if not the most, successful combination oral contraceptives ever. A person of ordinary skill in the art is aware of that. A person of ordinary skill in the art is going to read the 006 patent and recognize what example 4 and in claim 9 is covered.
How would a person skilled in the art know that it's 25 microliters that's a desirable dosage in the 006 patent?
The 006 patent gives a range, Your Honor. And if
that's a really big range.
I would submit that based on the testimony in this case, it's really not that large.
Yeah, but the district court, as Judge Reyna points out, seemed to be concerned that there was no express teaching of 25. There was no express teaching of a reduction by 10.
Or 5.
The reference itself did not say move in 5 microgram increments. But the testimony was not rebutted, Your Honor, at trial, that the only approved oral contraceptives as of that time in the United States always move or vary by 5 microgram increments. That was not rebutted. And the unrebutted testimony of Dr. Barnhart was to the same effect. That it's not a wide range. It's really 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. Now
before
the question.
Before your time runs out, could you move to the obviousness? It seems like a lot of the concerns that the district court had revolved around the cycle control.
Yes.
And with regard to reasonable expectation of success or others. Can you respond to why, in your view, that's not relevant or not dispositive with respect to the obviousness concern?
There are certainly several answers to that. First, reasonable expectation of success is to be directed towards a claim. The claim says nothing about cycle control. What the claim says is it's an oral contraceptive. It doesn't say anything about the cycle control benefits of that. But let's look at the record as to whether there really was such a concern. Was there some level of concern that there might be a change if there's a reduction in the amount of estrogen? One can say that there's a possibility that there might be a reduction. But there's also a possibility that there's not going to be a reduction because, and this actually goes back to the heart of one of the key issues in this case, dealing with obviousness, and that's the expectation. The record had in it only information about a low dose of 20 micrograms. There was never in the history of oral contraceptives, as far as I know, and certainly in the U.S., a product that contained 25 micrograms. The testimony from, and again, this was not rebutted, including Dr. Darney, one of the ortho experts, was that he didn't know what to expect. And the inside testimony from ortho, which is under a protective order, we do quote it in the brief, specifically addresses the question of the expectations of what would come from that, the amount of cycle control that would occur. And the expectation was they would have a successful oral contraceptive. And that's really the only question that's involved here.
And what was the motivation here?
The motivation,
estrogen, because of its bad side effects.
I'd say it was multifaceted, and much of the testimony came in through again Dr. Barnhart. The FDA said you should prescribe to the clinicians. You should prescribe the lowest dose possible to the patients. The motivation to reduce was also a market motivation. And we have this in our brief. It's under the protective orders. I can't quote it directly. Where the market was clearly moving down with respect to the amount of estrogen.
But isn't that motivation to decrease estrogen at least coupled with some sort of motivation or concern with regard to cycle control?
The motivation to move down is to do away with the the problems associated with it.
But the concern was that there was a problem with breakthrough bleeding, that when you decrease the estrogen level, that creates the other concerns, right?
There was a concern expressed based on the data that's in the Table 4 in the patent. It's 20 micrograms of EE. There's no data on 25 micrograms.
Even Dr. Pasquale says in his book that there, if you lower the estrogen, you're facing a trade-off. Isn't that what you've been arguing, teaching away?
There is indeed the possibility that by moving to 25, there might have been a reduction in estrogen. But there, again, was no evidence that such would actually occur. And even if, following up on your question, Your Honor, even if it's a trade-off, it doesn't then motivate one not to make the product. The motivation, in fact, was clearly there to make it, even if there were some amount of reduction of cycle control as you lower the amount of estrogen. The fact that a few additional women might potentially have a reduced amount of cycle control doesn't mean you then decide not to make a product where a vast majority of women are going to benefit by that lower amount. And again, the motivation is clear in the record. The FDA said move down.
At that time, the prior art taught that if you lowered the estrogen, you were going to cause further bleeding. I mean, how does that make commercial sense?
The problem, I think, Your Honor, is it's not a unitary concept. It doesn't mean that if you reduce the estrogen, and in fact it does cause additional bleeding, it's going to affect all women.
Well, isn't it also the case that the 06 patent says the purpose, which contains the wide range, says the purpose is to lower total monthly steroid dose while still obtaining equivalent bleeding patterns and protection against pregnancy? So that suggests that you could lower the dose without increasing bleeding pattern.
Well, indeed, Your Honor, as I said, there is no evidence at all that by going to 25, you're going to have an adverse effect on the bleeding pattern. The evidence is if you go down to 20, that clearly took place. And there is no record testimony as to what would happen at 25 because there was no product that was at 25. That also couples with the issue of where is the unexpected results from the standpoint of how do you judge unexpected results? And this court has found that unexpected results can only be viewed in terms of a difference from what was expected. And there is nothing in the record that tells you what to expect if you were going to move to a 25 microgram dosage from 35. Nothing.
Without that, testimony that if you did that there would be cycle control problems.
There is no evidence at all, Your Honor, that by moving to 25 there in fact will be. There's the concept of a threshold effect. You know that even today where that line is as to how much of a reduction you can encounter and have an actual reduction. And Dr. Barnhart again testified to that. There's the discussion as to a threshold effect. Where is there any proof as to where that threshold actually is? Was there some level of potential concern? Some concern. What was the expectation that you were going to have once you reduced from 35 to 25? You can't find that in the record. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because there was no data. And Dr. Darney said specifically in his testimony, when I asked him, so what happens when you move from 20 to 25? He said, well, yeah, I don't know because there's no data on that. And without proof of the expectation that's to be shown to be unexpected then when you move from 35 to 25, there cannot be a showing of unexpected results. On the topic of unexpected results, there are probably 10 different issues that we have with the unexpected results. And let me just start with the fact that there was no original expectation. The cross-study comparison data, it was a study comparison between data that was 10 years old and the more current data. It was not a head-to-head comparison. The FDA itself will not approve a product market approach from the standpoint of no difference with respect to breakthrough bleeding unless there's a head-to-head showing. There's a decision that was recently issued, Duramed, that at the district court level that actually says, well, then how can there be a showing of unexpected results in this case? There's no showing that would allow the marketing of the product with that argument that there was no change in the cycle control. The fact is that
you're into your rebuttal time, seriously, so you want to at least conclude the point you're making.
You are certainly correct, Your Honor. Let me just conclude on that point. From the standpoint of the actual data that is shown in Table 5, even through the analysis done by Ortho, there was a difference that was shown. It wasn't the same. Three out of the first six cycles were shown to have worse cycle control. Thank you.
Thank you. Since we asked you some questions, we'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal time and to keep things even, if Mr. Pappas needs it, we'll add 2 minutes to his time.
Let me start, if I may, Your Honor, by orienting ourselves a bit. In that Judge Chesler sat for a six-day, very lengthy trial, heard a substantial amount of evidence, most of which, as it turns out, was actually adduced by Janssen, even though Lupin had the burden of proof by clear and convincing evidence. But be that as it may, he made factual findings that support his judgment of no anticipation and no obviousness. And as this Court has held, that is reviewable only upon and overturnable only by a demonstration of clear error. And I start here because I think this informs the rest of my comments, because this Court has said clear error means that what the district judge decided, to quote K.O. versus Unilever, is implausible in light of the entire record, or where it chooses one of two permissible views of the evidence, that is acceptable. So I will now deal with the evidence. But I think what's important to do to set the stage is that there was ample evidence on every question Your Honors have asked and every point we asserted at the trial. Judge Chesler made factual findings, and this Court, although obviousness is ultimately a question of law, has said repeatedly that everything from what the prior art discloses to motivation to make the invention to reasonable expectation of success and unexpected results are factual findings.
Well, let's turn then, as you suggest, yes, to the findings. Okay, the district court made one finding that Lupin failed to demonstrate why a person skilled in the art would have looked to the 06 patent to create a lower dose of LE. In my view, that question is irrelevant to the obviousness inquiry. Our case law doesn't require that a patent challenger identify a particular reason to choose a particular piece of art. This isn't a completely, entirely different field. And in fact, I think there is a clear reason when one would have looked to the 06 patent. So you want to, you know, I know there are numerous findings upon which you can rest, but this is at least one where I had a bit of a problem.
And your question, Your Honor, has to do with whether or not one would have started with the 006 patent.
Yeah, well, they put the burden, it seems, the district court put the burden, it seems, on Lupin to demonstrate why a person skilled in the art would have looked to the 06 patent at all. I don't know that that's a fear, you know.
I think I can address that, Your Honor. That, I think what Judge Chesler was referring to is that's how Lupin chose to try the case. Lupin chose to attack the obviousness of the patent by citing the 006 patent. And indeed, that was pretty much the central point of their case. So Lupin chose to focus the trial judge on the 006 patent and pitch their entire argument to the proposition that the 006 rendered the 851 patent that covers ortho-tricyclin low either anticipated or obviousness. So I think, Your Honor, in fairness, I think that's what Judge Chesler was indicating. And indeed, it might be interesting to note that from the starting point, that this was in basically why it would have been a do-over. What I think was interesting that happened at the Patent Office is that the 006 was the patent focused on by the examiner. Indeed, Janssen's patent lawyer, when first receiving a rejection over the 554, Pasquale patent, said, "No, Mr. Examiner, please, we think Janssen thinks the 006 patent is the closest prior art, went on to distinguish over it by showing unexpected results and obtain patentability. The essence of review of the entire record of Lupin's case is that the patent office was wrong and the 006 patent renders it anticipated or obvious. And, Your Honor, therefore, I think it would be helpful if I just review what we think is the critical evidence that supports the judge's findings on why there was no anticipation and also why there's no...
as long as you can make sure in that analysis that you include the question of unexpected results, simply because you raised it here.
Yes.
The reading of the patent is, this is for a method and a contraceptive method and product. And the unexpected results analysis seems to be focused primarily, if not entirely, on this breakthrough bleeding problem,
yeah,
which is not something covered by the patent. I mean, there's contraception, there's a, you know, breakthrough bleeding issue, but it's not something that's claimed in your patent. So why is that relevant, or certainly, why is that dispositive of anything?
Well, Your Honor, I can answer that in multiple ways. First of all, this Court has held before that the inherent properties of a composition or even a method of using a particular product are part and parcel of the product, even though of the invention, even though that each and every element is claimed. In the Yamanuchi case, they considered toxicity and other aspects of the composition, even though they weren't all named in the claim. But in addition, this, the 815 patent is an oral contraceptive patent, and the claim construction, etc., address the fact that it has to be contraceptively effective. And what the evidence at the trial showed is that if cycle control is sufficiently serious, problematic for the woman, what will happen is she will cease taking the oral contraceptive and thereby become pregnant, leading to a whole host of legal and ethical issues that she would then have to face. So whether or not a contraceptive is effective, which is what's claimed in the patent, is part and parcel of the invention, is the side effect of cycle control, and that was recognized by the patent office because indeed the patent was allowed by a showing of unexpected results in terms of the cycle control. And in terms of whether or not these results were unexpected, Your Honor, let me address that in two parts and to respond to Mr. Green as well. The evidence is clear on the first prong of that ortho-tricycline low demonstrated substantially the same quality cycle control as ortho-tricycline, the 35 micrograms held. Indeed, Dr. Sarah Berger, their expert, admitted that. And as a result, the judge found that there was ample statistical evidence to support that based on Dr. Camus and Dr. Darney. In addition, let's talk about why the results were unexpected. Well, we know from all the evidence that was produced by us that there were teachings in the prior art that if you lowered estrogen by 10 micrograms, Ackerlin and Endocrat taught, by 10 micrograms, you would get poor cycle control. And we cite five prior art publications in our brief that all hearken to that teaching of Ackerlin and Endocrat. So that's what the skilled artisan thought in 1998. If I take estrogen down 10 micrograms, I'm going to get poor cycle control, which will then defeat the entire purpose of the contraceptive. Now, Mr. Green suggested to Your Honors that there was no evidence that you would be concerned about that with 25. Wrong. Dr. Darney explained that a pasita, a person of ordinary skill of the art, would have looked to the experience with the 30 microgram to 20 microgram comparisons in Ackerlin and Endocrat when forming an expectation about what would happen when reducing EE dosage from 35 to 25 micrograms. He further explained that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have expected the same relative decrease in cycle control with such a reduction. Appendix 13994, line 10 through 14004.8. So as a result, there was ample evidence, and in fact, that's what the prior art taught. And many authors subsequent to Ackerlin and Endocrat agreed with that proposition. Moreover, there was a general teaching in the art at that time by many references, seven references that we cited. It was understood by all skilled artisans that if you lowered estrogen, you would get increased problems or poor cycle control. As an additional reason, what the prior also taught, which their experts never addressed in the trial, these are triphasic regimens. And to your point earlier, Your Honor, about the question of anticipation, this is not an estrogen patent. The 851, the 815 is a combination triphasic regimen patents with six variables: progestin, progestin dosage, estrogen, estrogen dosage, pill-free period, and number of days in the phases. And the Lupin argument ignores all of those elements of the patent because they don't help them and they have no answer. And they want you to focus on estrogen only. But what does the prior art teach? If you wanted to try to reduce estrogen, the prior art teaches you need to make compensatory changes, which means if you want to lower the estrogen, you need to increase the progestin. Their expert never addressed that. We have ample evidence that that's exactly what would happen. And indeed, proof in the marketplace. Dr. Sarah Berger first testified as their expert that, oh, there would have been no expectation. There was nothing out there. Then on cross-examination, I asked her about her service to Park Davis as a consultant before she was a hired expert in this case on Mercet and Estrostep, 20 microgram pills, poor cycle control. And I compelled her with the evidence to admit that, in fact, as a result of the poor cycle control of the 20 microgram pills, first that it was acknowledged in the market that the cycle control was bad and it was leading to discontinuation by women. So what do? Well, in one pill, they raised the amount of estrogen in subsequent phases. In another, in the other, they actually had the woman take the contraceptive for 5 of the 7 days of the pill-free period. What does that teach us? What does that teach all skilled artisans? If you want to touch one element of the regimen, you make compensatory changes somewhere else. That was totally ignored. Dr. Barnhart didn't admit it. Dr. Barnhart even addressed it precisely. And in addition, what Dr. Barnhart did, and this is really a perniciousness, in my view, of what Lupin is attempting to do here. When Dr. Barnhart tried to limit the class, here's the game he played. He told Judge Shessler, well, I'm going to limit to 1 of 7 dosages on estrogen. And when the judge asked him, well, what about 35 micrograms is the preferred dosage? He says, well, I'm going to ignore that. I'm just going to pick 25, even though the patent teaches that 35 is the preferred dosage. But when he wanted to limit the class, the range of possibilities, even though the patent says 5 to 7 days pill-free period, he said, I'm just choosing 7. So we cross-examined him. Why do you pick the preferred dosage and ignore the range? Didn't really have a good answer to that. But in fact, what he was doing, which obviously caused the judge to seriously question his credibility, is game playing. You either accept the entire ranges or you accept the preferred ranges, but you can't have it both ways. Now, back to the end. So, Your Honor, for all of those reasons, there was not only no motivation, but no expectation of success. I want to quote something else, because I'm not sure very many patents...
You're saying, Mr. Mapps, you could also say that these various ranges that are possible preclude the anticipation.
They do. They do. And they do, Your Honor, because...
Even though, under our range cases, the 25 milligrams is shown.
25 milligrams, Your Honor, is within the range of 20 to 50. No question about that. However, the 815 patent is a regimen patent with six variables, which the undisputed testimony said each variable is interchangeable, is synergistically related to the others. Dr. Shulman testified that even making certain assumptions about the number of progestogen dosages, as well as the progestins and the estrogens, he had 841 million possibilities. If you calculated the class just using the preferences, so Dr. Shulman gave an alternate opinion.
So Dr. Shulman was talking not about the 815, he was talking about the 06 path. When he
correct.
Was talking about
yes, Your Honor. The one that they claim anticipates
right.
Okay. 06. So Dr. Shulman tested another way. He said, let's assume we just took the preference in each of the six. 1,126,638 possible regimens. Even if you were to just have the preference for the 7-day pill-free period, you still get 375,546 regimens. Now, Judge Schall, your question, what the cases say is, in order to have anticipation by a prior reference of a subsequent reference where a species is claimed, where the genus is disclosed, the skilled artisan, and this is pretty much well settled, at least last time I checked in this court, must immediately envisage a limited class and each member of that class. Our testimony was there was no limited class and a skilled artisan would not immediately envisage each member. Dr. Berger didn't even address it. And Dr. Barnhart never, ever identified the class. All his testimony to sum and substance was he just focused on the estrogen dosage and a bit of a nod to the pill-free period. But he never, for instance, answered and was never asked on direct examination, Dr. Barnhart, what is the size of the limited class, taking into account the possible progestins, the possible progestin dosages, the possible estrogens, estrogen dosages, and the pill-free period? In other words, a proper question when the prior art reference was a six-part contraceptive regimen. Look at the titles of the 006. It's not the estrogen patent. It's triphasic oral contraceptive. That's what it is. That's the invention. So, Judge Burroughs, back to you. I think your first question to Mr. Green is the failure on anticipation is simply the inability to prove, and it was their burden of clear and convincing evidence, that there was a limited class and that the skilled artisan would immediately envisage the limited class. Simply put, we've treated the patent properly with all the ranges that are disclosed in the 006. Lupin cherry picks, and they actually expect you to accept the proposition that you would just look at one element of the range. And one element
of the range. Try to manufacture in five, the limited class with 5 microgram increments?
Yes, Your Honor, your first question was, didn't Lupin...
Didn't they try to manufacture with a limited class of 5 microgram increments?
Your Honor, I'm not aware whether they did or not. Your Honor, I see my time is running out. Let me say two things. One is, in this case, you have a rare occurrence. Dr. Samuel Pasquale, the inventor of the 006 and the 554 patents, had subsequent patents. He's an extraordinary artisan. But what's important, these patents were issued after the 554 and the 006. What does he teach the skilled artisan but before the 815? Teaching away. About his cycle, about his 777 regimen disclosed in the 554 and 061, he said, quote, effective low-dose contraceptive regimen with ideal cycle control may be achieved by departing from the 7-7 regimens of the Pasquale patents and administering a low dose of steroids over at least 24 days.
We'll have the record with the site.
I will, Your Honor. The site of that, Your Honor, is Appendix 13883, line 16, through Appendix 13887, line 24. It's Darney's testimony regarding the Pasquale patent. And Judge Rayner, in response to one of your questions, it's also disclosed at the 724 patent, A1472, another Pasquale patent, and it was subsequently reported in the birth control book. Now, lest there be any question about how serious this would be, the Lawson article, which was testified to by Dr. Shulman, at 8832 through 8837. Very important. It was a study of norgestimate with a 0.125 dosage and 35 micrograms and then same amount of progestin and 25 micrograms. You know what happened? 8 times more pregnancy with the 25 microgram dose than the 35. from 0.69 to 35 to 5.71. Can there be any doubt that a skilled artisan at that time would not have been motivated just to lower the estrogen from 35 to 25 when he had a prior art reference says you will get 8 times as many pregnancies? Simply, Your Honors, I'll conclude by saying this, and I think this is very important. Lupin bore the burden by clear and convincing and here to demonstrate clear error. You compare these briefs, and what you see is there is a paucity of record sites in the Lupin briefs. The Janssen brief is loaded with them. Though we didn't bear the burden at all, the substantial weight of the evidence and the substantial amount of the evidence, not just from our experts, but from what prior art references, from what all the leaders in the field believe, was that this was a remarkable invention. And I'll close with a quote from Dr. Michel. Dan Michel, out of California, who Dr. Berger recognized as, called him actually the king. He's probably the leading living authority on contraception. And he wrote about tricyclin low. OTC low was the exception to the general relationship between ethanol, estradiol, and cycle control, given that it had excellent cycle control at the lower dose of estrogen. That is the quintessential statement of non-obviousness. The leader in the field said OTC low is the exception to the rule. Because the rule was, if you take estrogen down, you're going to get lousy cycle control, women will quit taking the pill, and then it doesn't work as contraceptive. He says it's the exception. They cited no evidence, no prior art, that said that the cycle control wasn't as good as OTC, as ortho-tricyclin, and no prior art reference can Lupin point to that suggested that 25 micrograms, that a drop of 10 micrograms in that regimen would achieve the unexpectedly good cycle control. Their burden. If there was such motivation out there, where was the prior art? We have all the prior art, which says, don't you dare take it down 10 micrograms. For those reasons, Your Honor, we respectfully request that this court affirm Judge Chesler's ruling. Thank you.
We thank you. Mr. Green, well, you started with two, and since Mr. Pappas went over some, we'll give you another 3 minutes, so you've got a total of 5 on rebuttal.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. Otherwise, I was going to need to talk extremely fast. So let me start with Lawson. The Lawson article it's not even relevant. It dealt with 125 micrograms of nergestamate, not 180 or 215 or 250, which is the issue here for the ortho-tricyclin to ortho-tricyclin low product, not even relevant. With respect to Dr. Berger, the judge clearly got that wrong. If you read our brief at pages 42 to 43 and our reply at page 23,
her testimony was this. In her view, she's a practicing clinician. She's seen an innumerable number of patients. She doesn't think there's any difference among any of the oral contraceptives. She uses the ortho-tricyclin. She uses the lolestrin 120 even. It has 20 micrograms. She's used it for a decade or so. She's on cycle control. She sees no clinical difference between 20 all the way up to the 35, whatever's in the marketplace today. So when she said she didn't see a difference clinically between ortho-tricyclin and ortho-tricyclin low, it's because she doesn't see a difference between any of them. So there's no unexpected result here, and that's where the district court went astray, because in interpreting that to mean that was unexpected results was plain wrong. Her testimony is they're all the same. There is no difference in that case. Mr. Pappas started with the issue of what happened to the PTO. What happened to the PTO was Ortho went directly for the showing of unexpected results. There was no argument that there was lack of motivation or some teaching away or any of the other arguments that have been made today, not before the patent examiner. So it's not as though Lupin's position was already dealt with by the patent examiner. Those issues were never raised. The only issue raised was unexpected results. Lupin's position on the unexpected results today
brings into the picture an enormous amount of information that the patent examiner did not have. Mr. Pappas said that, well, where's the data that shows that there was a difference? Again, it's an art brief. The Cremude data, he did a regression analysis. He found that actually there was a statistically significant difference between orthotricycline and orthotricycline low in 3 out of the first 6 cycles. Dr. Darney's testimony is those are the most critical cycles, looking at the early cycles from the standpoint of discontinuation due to early bleeding. The comment with respect to Yamanuchi and that you need to look at the nexus that this court has recognized between a product and its properties, again, has nothing to do with this case. That's a molecule patent. And I agree wholeheartedly the position of this court when it comes to molecule patents is that the compound and its properties are inextricably intertwined. This is not a compound patent. This is about a regimen. A regimen that's explained in column 1 at beginning about line 51. That's a difference from the prior art wherein the amount of estrogen is maintained over 3 phases, whereas you have an increasing amount of progestin. That is the teaching across the entire spectrum of that patent. And that's why when you look at, and I do believe that the law actually looks at cases such as this with a physician through the eyes of a person of ordinary skill in the art, and there is some amount of rational thought that goes behind that. And the reason why this court says, look at it through the eyes of a person of ordinary skill in the art, is so that you don't find a million possibilities. What you find is one clear teaching in example 4 and in claim 9 that there's a really good product out there and it's called orthotricycline. You want to find a species within a genus, there it is. It's right there. And what does one of ordinary skill in the art do looking at the state of the art, wanting to look at lowering estrogen, which, by the way, the district court found at page 820 that a person of ordinary skill in the art wanted to create OC regimens with lower EE dosages. That was a finding by the district court. And I would also point you to the Grimes testimony from Ortho at A6245 and 6267 with respect to lowering the estrogen dose, where he said, even if there's a problem potentially, that there may be some lower cycle control, yeah, we're moving forward that way, because that's the way the market was heading. I see that my time is up, Your Honor, and I appreciate you taking the time and putting it back into my time.
Thank you. We thank both counsel. Cases.